ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्णा। सो रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 7 चैप्टर 1 द सुप्रीम लॉर्ड इज इक्वल टू एवरीवन टेक्स्ट 36 एंड 37। श्रीनारद उवाच एकदा ब्रह्मणः पुत्रा विष्णुलोकं यदृच्छया सनन्दनादयो जग्मुः चरन्तो भुवनत्रयम्। The great saint Narada said, once upon a time, when the four sons of Lord Brahma, named Sanak, Sanandan, Sanatan, and Sanat Kumar, were wandering throughout the three worlds, they came by chance to Vishnuloka. Now we'll read text 37. Panchashaddha. पञ्चषड्ढायणार्भाभः पूर्वेषामपि पूर्वजाः दिक्वाससः शिशून्मत्वा द्वःस्थौतान् प्रत्येषधातम् द्वःस्थौतान् प्रत्यषेधताम् पञ्चषड्ढायाणार्भाभाः पूर्वेषाम् अपि पूर्वजाः दिक्वाससः शिशून्मत्वा द्वाहस्थौतान् प्रत्यषेधताम्। Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: although these four great sages were older than Brahma's other sons, like Marichi, they appeared like small naked children, only 5 or 6 years old. When Jay and Vijay saw them trying to enter Vaikuntha Loka, these two gatekeepers, thinking them ordinary children, forbade them to enter. Purport: in this regard, Srila Madhvacharya says in his Tantrasar, Dvahasthav iti aninadhikar sthatvatam uktam अधिकारस्थितश्चैव विमुक्ताश्च द्विधा जनाः विष्णुलोकस्थितास्तेषां वरशापादियोगिनः अधिकारस्थितां मुक्तिं नियतं प्राप्नुवन्ति च विमुक्त्यनन्तरं तेषां वरशापादयो ननु देहेन्द्रियासुयुक्ताश्च पूर्वं पश्चान् न तैर्युताः अप्यभिमानाभिस्तेषां देवहि स्वात्मोत्तमैर्युताः। द पर्पोर्ट इज दैट द पर्सनल एसोसिएट्स ऑफ लॉर्ड विष्णु इन वैकुंठ लोका आर ऑलवेज लिबरेटेड सोल्स। इवन इफ समटाइम्स कर्स्ड और ब्लेस्ड, दे आर ऑलवेज लिबरेटेड एंड नेवर कंटेमिनेटेड बाय द मटीरियल मोड्स ऑफ नेचर। Before their liberation to Vaikuntha Loka, they possessed material bodies. But once they came to Vaikuntha, they no longer have them. Therefore, even if the associates of Lord Vishnu sometimes descend as if cursed, they are always liberated. So kindly repeat the translation. Although these great four great sages were older than Brahma's other sons, like Marichi, they appeared like small naked children, only 5 or 6 years old. When Jay and Vijay saw them trying to enter Vaikuntha Loka, these two gatekeepers, thinking them ordinary children, forbade them to enter. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Hare Krishna. These are the last 2 days of Kartik month, wherein Lord Krishna has given us so many simple and easy ways to advance in our Krishna consciousness, so that eventually we can return to Vaikuntha Loka, the spiritual world. But what it means to be in Vaikuntha is described here when we see the residents of Vaikuntha, Jay and Vijay, pure as everything else is in Vaikuntha. As Srila Prabhupada is explaining here in the purport, that these associates of the Lord are always, that is, eternally liberated souls. Even if it so appears that they are cursed and that they fall down into the material world, like Jay and Vijay eventually did, it doesn't mean that they are like the ordinary souls of this world. They always remain liberated. As Prabhupada says here, one may, in an unliberated state, in a conditioned state, have a material body. But once, by dint of devotional service and the mercy of the Lord, one returns to Vaikuntha, one gets a pure spiritual body. So therefore, for the eternal associates of the Lord, their descent into the world is also something like that of the Lord. It is not to be considered something ordinary. The background to these verses is that Yudhishthir Maharaj wants to know from Narad Muni how it is that someone as offensive and sinful as Shishupal actually got the opportunity to merge into the body of Lord Krishna. To attain to Krishna's nature, even if it means to merge into his body, is not something ordinary. It can happen only by years and years, in fact, lifetimes of practice, of austerities, of service, and so on. And thinking of examples like Maharaj Vena, who were very sinful kings and who eventually had to descend into hellish conditions, Maharaj Yudhishthir must have thought that Shishupal was no less. He was also such a great blasphemer of the Lord and the devotees of the Lord. Actually, Shishupal, right from childhood, from babyhood, was blaspheming Krishna. So there was not a day, probably not a moment that passed without his feeling envious about Krishna. So such a person got the good fortune of merging into Krishna. This was something inconceivable for Maharaj Yudhishthir. So therefore, the question. And in the course of answering this question, Narad Muni has spoken some very important verses which we have heard in the previous days about the power of, or the intensity of remembering Krishna even by envy or fear. But of course, our acharyas have pointed out that even if one is thinking of Krishna out of envy, like Shishupal did, or out of fear, as Kansa did, even if such remembrance is for 24 hours a day, even if it is without deviation, still we don't consider that person to be a devotee. So thinking of Krishna 24 hours a day is not sufficient. As Rupa Goswami has said, it must be anukulyena, it must be very favorably done, such thinking or devotional service. So therefore, even though they were able to focus their mind upon Krishna, they are not considered devotees. But nevertheless, like we see in the case of Shishupal and Kansa, they actually got liberated. So then, what is the reason behind that? If they are not devotees, how is it that Narad Muni has said that they have attained the same destination? So in order to explain this in the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami has given us two very simple examples. And we can also give day-to-day examples in our everyday life to illustrate and further strengthen the same point. Rupa Goswami gives the example of the sun globe and the sunshine. Srila Prabhupada says that there are many aeroplanes or spaceships that may fly in the sunshine, but that doesn't mean that they have gone into the sun globe. Now, the sunshine is, from one point of view, non-different from the sun. At the same time, flying in the sunshine doesn't mean that one has entered the sun globe. Similarly, he gives another example, and that of the kingdom and the king's palace. The kingdom has many thousands and thousands of citizens, the praja, and they all live there under the shelter of the king. But very few amongst them have the privilege of entering into the king's palace and actually living there with the king. Only those who are his intimate associates, his family members, can actually enter there. There is another very special category of people who may not be his blood relatives, who may not be the queen or the children, the prince, princess, and so on, but they can also enter. And who are they? They are the servants of the king. The servants of the king actually are very fortunate because they also have the same postal address as the king. When someone writes them a letter, the address will be so-and-so and the place will be the palace. The same address as the king. And actually, the servants who are residing within the palace enjoy the same opulences. They're going in the same bejeweled palaces. There's so many bejeweled pillars and coral, emeralds, floors and all the jewels and all the decorations and everything, the grandeur, the opulence of the palace. They also share that. They live 24 hours in that opulent atmosphere. And sometimes the king is eating his delicacies and he says, okay, now you eat. This is also for you. There's so much leftover, you eat. So he enjoys the same delicacies as the king does. The king perhaps may change his clothes every day, get new clothes every day. And then what does he do with the old ones? He gives to the servants. So the servants may enjoy those clothes. They may wear those clothes. And what to speak of the power that he enjoys. When the cook of the king goes out onto the street, nobody dares to meddle with him. He is the king's cook. As powerful as the king, because one little word to the king and that other person would be in trouble. So therefore, although he's only a cook of the king or a personal attendant of the king, but he has the ear of the king because he's personally serving the king. And therefore, he acquires opulence, powers, facilities, and so on, which are almost on par with the king. So this is the situation also of the devotees. They reside in the king's palace. They reside in the sun globe, so to speak, to refer to the first example. And the other citizens, they're also citizens of the king, of the kingdom, But because they are not related to the Lord in such an intimate way, so they have to stay outside the palace. So similarly, those who aspire for the path of on the path of Jnana Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga with the desire to merge into the impersonal effulgence of the Lord, they are given that opportunity by the mercy of the Lord. They enter into the kingdom of the Lord, but they do not enter the spiritual Vaikuntha planets. They can only remain in the sunshine or in the Brahma Jyoti, that effulgence. Whereas the devotees, they are servants of the Lord. They have a relationship of intimate loving service, and therefore they are given entrance into the kingdom, or rather into the palace, into the Vaikuntha planets, where they can eternally live with and associate with the Lord and his other devotees. Let's give another simple example. Suppose there are two people going from Bombay to Delhi, and both are sitting in the train, and they are asked by the people, "Where are you going?" Both of them say Delhi. So from the point of view of Bombay, both these people are going to Delhi. But suppose there are two of us, myself and you. When we reach Delhi, I may go to some dharamshala and you may go to the Taj Mahal 5-star hotel. So although we have gone to Delhi, so from the point of view of Bombay, we have gone to the same destination, which is Delhi. But having reached Delhi, our destinations are vastly different. One person has gone to a 5-star hotel to stay in a very expensive place, and the other person has gone to stay in an ordinary dharamshala or a guest house or an ashram. Similarly, so when Narad Muni has said in the previous verses that both Kansa, Shishupal, and those who have remembered the Lord with fear, with envy, and so on, also have attained the same destination as those who are devotees and also those who have affection for him, what he means to say is that with reference to the material world, they have gone to the same place. They have all become promoted to a transcendental position. However, even in that transcendental realm, there are gradations. There is the effulgence of the Brahma Jyoti, and there are the spiritual planets. So those who are killed by the Lord, like Kansa and so on, and also those who are impersonalists, who attain perfection in their path, they merge or they remain with the impersonal effulgence of the Lord. Whereas the devotees, having entered the transcendental realm, they go to the Vaikuntha planets and serve the Lord constantly. So in other words, we understand that the doorkeepers Jay and Vijay are not to be considered ordinary people, even though we see later on that they are cursed and they come down here as asuras. But after three births, then they go back. Even though Shishupal, his soul merged into Krishna's body, Srila Prabhupada explains in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that actually this was but a via medium for him to return back, to return to his original constitutional service as a doorkeeper of the Lord in Vaikuntha. So in this way we see that the eternal associates of the Lord, they live there, they serve the Lord, they enjoy his company. Now, devotees of the Lord don't like the concept of doing anything that is devoid of service to the Lord. They don't even want this kind of liberation. There is a verse by Kapila Dev in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam where he says, Salokya sarshti samipya sarupekatvam apyuta diyamanam na grananti vina matsevanam janaha. What this means is that janaha means here refers to the devotees of the Lord. They do not accept even these five kinds of liberation if the Lord personally gives it to them. Diyamanam. If they are given that, na grahananti, they do not take it. Vina matsevanam. unless there is opportunity for service. So service is the key, because the devotee of the Lord wants to eternally serve the Lord with great devotion. Therefore, the place of service, the geographical location, is not important, because wherever he or she goes, there will be service to Krishna. This is the important principle. Srila Prabhupada used to say that in Bengal, in the fields, they have an implement called the dheki, which is used for threshing grain. And there is a proverb in Bengali which says which says that even if the dheki is taken to Swargaloka, it will still thresh grains. In other words, whatever is duty, it will keep on doing that. In the same way, a devotee of the Lord, wherever the devotee is, will always only serve the Lord. And if there is no opportunity for serving the Lord, the devotee will not go there. And even if the devotee is invited to go to the spiritual world, but if there's no service there, he will not go there. This is an interesting and important principle, that a devotee does not even wish to go to the Vaikuntha planets if there is no opportunity for service there. Of course, it is only a pure devotee who will be allowed entrance into the Vaikuntha planets in the first place. But nevertheless, the principle is that such is the devotee's mentality, that he or she doesn't want even this kind of liberation because there is no service there. Actually, Hanuman also says the same thing. Bhava bandha chide tasyai sprihayami na mokshaye bhavan prabhur aham dasa iti yatra vilupyate. It's a very nice prayer. He says that basically, my dear Lord, bhava bandha chide tasyai. Now you may destroy my material entanglement. Bhava bhadda, bandha. Bhava bhadda means the bondage of material existence. Chide, you may tear it asunder, you may tear it to pieces. Or muktaya, you may grant me salvation and liberation. Na sprihayami, but I do not want these things. I do not want this impersonal liberation of merging into the Brahma Jyoti. Why is that? Because this whole mentality or the consciousness that Bhavan Prabhur, or that you are the Lord, Aham Dasa, and I am the servant, iti yatra vilupyate, is lost. So if I get liberated, and you are willing to offer liberation, but if I become liberated and merge into the impersonal Brahman, then the consciousness that I am your servant and you are my master will be lost. And I do not want that. So in this way, the devotee never seeks impersonal liberation, and he doesn't even seek entrance into the Vaikuntha planets if such entrance or residence is devoid of service to the Lord. Even now, in Kartik month, every day we are chanting the Damodarashtakam. And we are chanting, Varam Deva Moksham Na Mokshavadhim Va. Isn't it? What is the meaning of that? You are Varam Deva. You chant, you give all kinds of benedictions. O Lord, you are the king among all who gives benedictions. Na Vrineham Apeshad Variha Apiha. Vareshad, you are the best among those who give benedictions. But still, Idam Tevapur Natha Gopala Balam. But I only want to see you in this form as a cowherd boy, Gopala Balam. Sadame Manasya Virastam Kim Anyaihi. And I have no other desire apart from this. So I only want to see this most beautiful form of a cowherd boy of yours. I do not desire moksha. And moksha vadhim. The word moksha vadhim means moksha avadhim, means anything up to the point of moksha. I do not want anything up to the point of moksha or liberation, and I do not even want moksha. That means I want nothing of this world, and I want nothing of the world beyond. I only want devotional service to you. So this is the principle. And actually, that is what qualifies people for entrance into Vaikuntha Loka. So therefore, it is not an ordinary place because of this mentality. The four Kumaras are also liberated souls. And it is interesting to analyze their position. You see, they are the eldest sons of Lord Brahma, as has been mentioned in this verse here. And although they are the eldest, they look like the youngest, because they have assumed the form of 5 or 6 year old boys, because they felt that growing up means to become complicated. And when you grow up, then there's always a chance of falling into Maya. But if you are small, if you're a small child, then it's far easier to remain simple and uncomplicated. So they chose to remain as 5 or 6 year old boys, looking like that externally. And they refused the desire or the order of their father to enter the Grihastha ashram. And by dint of their austerities, penances, and their fine intellect, they actually became situated on the Brahmabhuta platform. They were on the liberated platform. And they were absorbed in meditation upon the impersonal Brahman. But because Brahma was their father, and he is also the guru of the whole universe, so he gave the four Kumaras, his oldest sons, good instructions about Krishna consciousness. And in doing so, he also described the beautiful form of the Lord, and the Kumaras heard that. So although the Kumaras were attracted to the impersonal Brahman effulgence, nevertheless, they had some understanding that the Lord is a person, and he has a beautiful form. And Srila Prabhupada explains in his purports in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that although the four Kumaras were absorbed in impersonal meditation, they had heard about the form of the Lord, but they did not have realization of that. They had only heard from the Father. But now, when they came to Vaikuntha, here was going to be the turning point in their life. The first turning point was that they heard from Brahmaji. They received the mercy of the original guru of this universe, Brahma. And the second turning point was here, when yadrichaya, by chance, they wandered here and there through the skyways, and they even penetrated the coverings of the universe and came to the doors of Vaikuntha. They actually didn't enter into the Vaikuntha planet, but they were at the door. Yadrichaya here means by chance, but we should understand that everything goes on by the dictation of the Lord in the heart. So this was all going on by the Lord's arrangement. The four Kumaras reached the gates of Vaikuntha. They crossed the first 6 gates. They came to the 7th gate. At the 7th gate, the doorkeeper Jay and Vijay saw that these 5 young children are just freely walking in without any visa or passport. They're just coming in like that. And they can't come in here. This is not meant for anyone and everyone. Jay and Vijay could not recognize them. Of course, we should understand that Jay and Vijay are perfected beings. And they could understand, but by the Lord's arrangement, by the influence of Yoga Maya, they actually restricted the entry of the four Kumaras into Vaikuntha. They stopped them. And the four Kumaras, again by the Lord's arrangement, became angry. And they actually cursed the sages, as we will see in the verses to come. This whole episode has been described only very briefly here. But in the third canto, it is described in a fair amount of detail. So the four Kumaras were inspired by the Lord from within the heart to actually curse the doorkeepers Jay and Vijay. And it is explained by Srila Prabhupada in the purport that this happened because the Lord wanted to enjoy some fighting. He had the desire to enjoy the Veer Ras, which is one of the secondary mellows of devotional service. And whom will the Lord fight with? When a king wants to enjoy a bout of wrestling to keep his body in good shape, then he doesn't just call anyone and everyone. He calls the champion wrestlers of his kingdom. And he appoints them in his service. And he looks after them very nicely. And then every day, or perhaps once or twice a week, he will get into a wrestling bout with them. So in the same way, and the Supreme Lord also sometimes wants to enjoy variegated tastes. And in order to do that, he employs the services of his devotees. So he wanted Jai and Vijay to come down to the material world, take on the form of demons and actually fight with him and give him that pleasure. But from the point of view of the material world, we should know that even though Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, Kumbhakarna and Ravana, and then Shishupala and Dantavakra were all Jai and Vijay originally, but because they're playing the role of demons, we cannot imitate them. We cannot say that because they're eternal associates, therefore what they did was glorious. No. We see their actions, and therefore because those actions were not in keeping with the principle of pure devotional service, therefore we condemn that. We do not accept that as an anga or as a limb of pure devotional service. So the four Kumaras came there, and then this whole exchange took place. The four Kumaras had heard about the Lord. They had never seen him face to face. When the Lord heard the commotion going on outside, and he saw that his devotees were in a precarious position, then he came running out. This is all one big transcendental drama going on. The spiritual world is all one big transcendental drama. That is called pastime. Pastime means that the Lord, although he is the Supreme Lord, he is the most powerful entity in all of creation, spiritual and material, but nevertheless he likes to engage in these activities of love with his devotees. And he shares his opulences and powers and everything with his devotees. So these are the pastimes going on there. So the Lord came running out. And as soon as he came out, the four Kumaras saw him. And the Bhagavatam describes that the fragrant breeze of Vaikuntha, it flowed past the lotus feet of the Lord. There were some tulsi leaves and buds that had been offered at the lotus feet of the Lord. The breeze mixed with the fragrance of the tulsi and carried it to the Kumaras. This breeze entered into the nostrils of the four Kumaras and they experienced a change of mind and heart. Their hairs began to stand on end. And this famous verse is there, which Prabhupada has quoted often. Tasya ravinda nayanasya padaravinda kinjalka mishra tulasi makaranda vayuhu antargata svavivarena chakara chesham sankshobham aksharurusham apichitta tanvoho. Shukadev Goswami says that these four Kumaras, they came to Vaikuntha and they saw the Supreme Lord. Tasya Aravinda Nayanasya. Tasya of him, Aravinda Nayana. Aravinda means a lotus. Nayana means eyes. So of him who has lotus eyes, they came there. And Padaravinda, at his lotus feet, on his toes to be specific, there was tulsi. The tulsi leaf was offered there. And makaranda vayuhu, makaranda means the fragrance. So the fragrant breeze became more fragrant carrying the tulsi offered to the lotus feet of the Lord. And that moved, svavivarena, entered the nostrils of these four Kumaras. Antargataha, and went right inside, chakara tesham. Sankshobham, their minds got agitated. Aksharajusham, they had earlier been contemplating and worshipping the impersonal Brahman, Akshara. But now that they saw the form of the Lord and they actually smelt the divine fragrance of the lotus feet of the Lord, then apichitta tanvoho, there was change in body, mind and heart. Srila Jiva Goswami mentions that when the tulsi leaves or flowers are offered to the lotus feet of the Lord, they actually acquired the fragrance of the lotus feet of the Lord. The lotus feet of the Lord are actually very fragrant. And that is why there are honeybees that always meander around the lotus feet of the Lord. Because it is very fragrant, like honey. So the honeybees are very fond of honey and fragrances. So they always move around. So devotees are like these honeybees who always hanker for the lotus feet of the Lord. And because these flowers have been offered to the lotus feet of the Lord, they also acquire that fragrance. So when we smell the tulsi and flowers offered to the Lord, we are actually smelling the fragrance of the Lord's lotus feet. Because the Lord is absolute. So therefore the four Kumaras actually smelt the lotus feet of the Lord. And they also saw him face to face and they heard him speak with his own mouth, so to speak. In the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Rupa Goswami has enunciated many, many regulative principles of devotional service. He talks about 64 rules. And one of them is Dhupa Malya Saurabhyam. And Dhupa means incense and Malya means the flowers and tulasi offered to the lotus feet of the Lord. So it says that when you smell the lotus, the flowers that have been offered, then what happens? All the piles of sinful activities that have been committed for many, many lifetimes, they all get destroyed. Simply by smelling the tulasi of flowers, that's called nirmalya. So nirmalya saurabham or saurabhyam, when we smell that, all the sins are destroyed. So one may ask, what about one who doesn't have any sins? Then Srila Prabhupada mentions in the Nectar of Devotion, then for such a person, even if he is on the liberated platform, like the Kumaras were, and in that case Prabhupada gives the example of the four Kumaras, that even if someone is on the situation of transcendence, on the platform of liberation like the four Kumaras, and even if they have been attracted to the impersonal Brahman effulgence of the Lord, by smelling the flowers offered to the lotus feet of the Lord, they will be transformed into devotees. So just see how merciful Krishna is, that he makes the process of devotional service so simple, so easy. You can simply, we have been talking about how you can eat your way back to Godhead, chant your way back to Godhead, but you can even smell your way back to Godhead. You can see your way back to Godhead. You can hear your way back to Godhead. You can clean your way back to Godhead. You can serve your way back to Godhead. So we can engage all our senses. And in any of these ways, if we please Krishna, then Krishna will take us back to Godhead for further service there. So the four Kumaras are ideal examples, Rupa Goswami says, of devotees in the mood of neutrality, in the mellow of neutrality, the Shantaras. It is explained that actually those who are sadhakas, who want salvation, who want liberation from material existence, they may perform different kinds of austerities and penances and so on. And eventually, by doing that, they come to the point of understanding the impersonal effulgence, and perhaps they become situated on the transcendental platform, Brahmabhuta platform. So they have become free from the bodily concept of life. They are situated firmly in transcendence and they are absorbed in the impersonal Brahman. Now, such a person, if he comes in contact with the pure devotee of the Lord and if he hears, Srila Prabhupada says, without interpretation, and sincerely, the messages of Lord Krishna from the scriptures, and he remains in the association of such pure devotees, then even he can become a devotee and he can become promoted to the Vaikuntha Loka, to the spiritual planets. And at that stage, by association of pure devotees of the Lord, now he becomes transformed from an impersonalist into a devotee. And at this beginning stage, it is called the mellow of neutrality. It is the Shantaras. At this stage, Srila Rupa Goswami explains, the sadhaka actually develops appreciation for the Vishnu form of the Lord. Therefore, the mystic yogis are advised to meditate on the four-armed form of the Lord in the heart. Dhyanavasthit tadgatena manasa pashyantiyam yoginaha. This is real meditation. Not that you meditate on something impersonal or some void or something, but you meditate on the form, the Vishnu form of the Lord. And by so doing, gradually we develop devotion for the Lord. Gradually one starts taking shelter of the Lord. One starts appreciating more and more the various qualities of the Lord, like His beauty, His mercy, and so on. These are all typical characteristics of one in the mellow of neutrality or the Shantaras. At that situation, he will actually try to appreciate more and more, but the active service is not so prominent. It is not so well developed in the devotee in Shantaras. So the four Kumaras are in that stage now, when they are here at this stage, when they are about to see the Lord. They have already heard about the Lord from Brahma, and now they are about to see what they have heard with their own eyes. And then it will be corroborated that whatever Brahma, their guru and their father had told them is actually true. Of course, they have believed that it is true, but now they have a chance to realize that. And they see the Lord, and then the transformations take place, and then they actually become transformed into devotees. Rupa Goswami explains that there are many impetuses for one who is in the Shantaras. And the first he mentions is to smell the tulasi leaves and flowers offered to the lotus feet of the Lord. And that is exactly what happened to the four Kumaras. There are other such impetuses also, like hearing the conch shell of the Lord, or even seeing some sanctified place in a hill or a mountain, or seeing a forest like Vrindavan, or being victorious over the bodily demands, or seeing the course of the Ganges, being in the Himalayas. So that inspires some kind of sense of appreciation for the Lord and an impetus to appreciate the Lord in awe and veneration. So Prabhupada says, this is the preliminary or the beginning stage of devotion. And Prabhupada uses the term would-be devotees. That people in Shantaras are would-be devotees. They have just moved into the category of devotional service. And if they continue like the four Kumaras did in the association of the devotees rendering devotional service, then they will make more and more advancement. Eventually they will reach higher and higher platforms. So it is 9:15. So here we see very interesting, the whole story is poised very interestingly now as far as the lives of the four Kumaras is concerned. And if you want to know what happened after this, you will have to come tomorrow to hear in the morning. A very interesting passage, and the details of this are given in the third canto. So we'll stop here for any questions or comments. Hare Krishna. Any questions, comments? No one. Okay, thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanande.